Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And this week we have a trio of guests with us today to talk about an important part of the revitalization of the church. When we often think of the liturgical revitalization of the church or improving the institutions of the church, but the church also, well, maybe even primarily, is an institution of loving the way that Christ loved. And that has always meant loving the poor and sharing lives with the poor. And there are new institutions popping up, new efforts, new ministries popping up all over to try to reinvigorate that tradition of the church. Well, one of those is in the Archdiocese of Denver here in the United States. It's called Christ in the City. And so we're going to talk about Christ in the City this hour on Catholic Answers Focus. Joining us will be Phil Couture, who is a formator for the young people who join Christ in the City, Blake Brouillette, who is a missionary, and McKenna Clausen, also a missionary for Christ in the City. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Phil, let me start with you. Could you, could you give me the elevator pitch? What is Christ in the City there in the Archdiocese of Denver?
No problem. Christ in the City is a nonprofit organization that intends to form missionaries for life, missionaries who identify as apostles and want to be formed to live that out for their whole lives. And they do that in particular by learning to know, love, and serve the poor.
So, and how old a ministry is it? How long have you been doing that?
Well, I've been doing it for about 2 years. The Christ in the City has existed for about 6 to 7 years. It actually started out as a summer program and then evolved into a year-long program.
And it must be more than a year-long program now, because I know both Blake and McKenna are in their second year.
Correct, yes. Actually, just 2 years ago, we decided to open up the possibility to having a second year. And Blake and McKenna are among the first fruits of that option.
Now, so most of the young people, I should say this, is it mostly young people who come, or do you have an age range that's typical for Christ in the City?
We do. It's typically college age, so from 18 to 28 years old.
Okay, so Blake, why don't we start with you? How did you find Christ in the City, and then what has your experience as a missionary with Christ in the City been like?
Yeah, so when I was a sophomore in college, I actually came on a mission trip to Christ in the City, and Christ in the City offers week-long mission trips as a spring break alternative. And you come to Christ in the City, live with the missionaries for a week. They train you, take you out on the streets with them, allow you to truly live the life alongside the missionary. And as a sophomore in college, my life was truly just changed by this week. I saw the poverty of the world, the poverty of myself, you know, the spiritual poverty, but as well as the joy that the Christ in the City community offered. And after that, after my sophomore year of college, I ended up going on 5 mission trips in college to Christ in the City before becoming a year service missionary right after graduation.
Wow. So, and when you do a mission trip, it is where? Where did you go to?
So Denver is our only location to do mission trips right now. And I came when I was in college, all mission trips were to Denver, actually, which sounds crazy. Like, why go on a mission trip in the United States, you know? But what we'd also do is bring college students with us. And the point of our mission trips is not just for you to come for a week and get a great experience serving the poor and then go home and, well, your time in Denver was great. You served the homeless there, but now you're done, you know, and back to your life. We truly challenge those who come here, like I was challenged, to come and learn how to acknowledge, like, you know, the spiritual poverty in yourself, in the world, in the homeless, and it allows you to see the spiritual poverty in others. So when these people who come on mission trips leave, you're actually equipped to be a missionary, you know, for life. And we try to instill that fire in those who come through our doors.
And McKenna, how about you? How did you end up with Christ in the City?
Yeah, I'm actually from Denver. So I grew up here and went to school in Kansas, but I'd always kind of had a heart for serving the homeless and saw a lot of our current friends on the street. I saw them when I was growing up, just kind of standing at street corners on stoplights, and my heart ached, and I wanted to do something. but I didn't know what to do. I wasn't really equipped to serve them. You know, I could serve at a soup kitchen or something like that, but I wanted more. And so I heard about Christ in the City while I was in college from one of my roommates, and I came and checked it out on a summer of service for a month, and it was a quick drive over from my house, but I had an amazing summer, and we invite college students to come for about a month-long program to kind of experience the missionary life, just all wrapped into 1 month. So that's what I did in the summer of 2013. And then kind of came back as often as I could since then, since I lived pretty close and could come over in the summer or on winter break, things like that. And then couldn't get enough, and so I signed up for a year and then a second year.
Well, that's interesting, the couldn't get enough thing, McKenna. I'll just I would guess that there are a lot of people who would be afraid or anxious about kind of immersing themselves for a week or for a month or certainly for a year among the homeless and the poorest of the poor really on American streets. And yet you say you couldn't get enough. Do you think people are surprised at their own emotional reaction to this?
Definitely. I mean, I was at least. I remember a lot of the things about Christ in the City were very countercultural to me, different ways that I've never experienced living. For example, being close friends with different homeless people and being able to call them my friends on the street. I had no idea what that would be like and how I could invest in their lives and they could invest in me and care about what was going on with me and ask me about my life. And even just basic things about our community, the simplicity of the way we live, living with, 20 other missionaries, was all like a challenge at first, but it was so, so radical that it very much appealed to me. And I think it appeals to a lot of young people in that way, this countercultural simplicity of life and living with the poor.
That makes sense. And Phil, for you, you talked a lot about poverty and about poverty of spirit. So maybe you could say something. I mean, the name of the program is Christ in the City. So what is it? How is this connected to a relationship with Christ?
I think it's connected in a lot of ways. What missionaries tend to offer as feedback of their year of service is that among the most powerful aspects of their formation are the streets themselves. This has a lot to do with the experience of encountering Christ, which is something very mysterious. I mean, we look at Matthew 25 and what he says there is very powerful. It's something that Christ himself has only said for, it's something he's only said for other Christians in other places or for the little ones. But he said, whatever you did for the least of these, you do to me. Right? That's only similar words have been repeated for Paul or for the children who come to him. And I think the experience of the missionaries is that they are meeting Christ face to face in a mysterious way. It's something that has been blessed to see. It's something that not everybody gets to. And so what I think takes place is that as they go through their formation where they live in community, where they learn to see Christ in each other, where they learn to put on Christ, to live out their baptismal promises, to accept the Eucharist, to be conformed to his image and likeness, they are able to offer Christ on the streets, and they themselves encounter him on a daily basis.
It sounds very almost like it's from the apostolic age in a way. Do you feel that you're in touch with the – or any of you can address this question. Just do you feel that you're kind of as the second – I guess I'll put it this way. The Second Vatican Council called for us to go – to return to the roots or return to the heart, the beginnings of the church. And so in many ways I think liturgical movements are doing that and all in many other ways we are. This feels like returning in some ways to the apostolic era in its openness to everyone and particularly openness to the poor and the sick and those in need. Do you feel that you're connecting back to the roots of the church doing this? Anybody?
I think you touched a really important thing there, Si, that I think of Paul in his letter to the Galatians. I think it's 2:10, where he's recounting when he received his commission to go to the Gentiles and to preach the gospel. But this was with a prerequisite that he served the poor, that he loved the poor. And he said, and this I was already excited to do. He was looking forward to. And one of his first missions upon becoming an apostle was that of providing relief to the church and gathering a collection. And I think this is something that we don't always pay attention to with the early apostles, that, in fact, everything they did, the poor had to be present. In fact, serving the poor was a prerequisite for anything else. So I think in this mission that we have of forming missionaries for life, I think we're really touching something that the early church itself was very aware of and that Christ himself wanted, which is that whatever we do, we have to have at least among us close to our heart.
And anybody else on the same question? Do you have that sense of connecting with the roots of the church?
Yeah, I think one thing that we really hit on a lot of Christ in the City, and what I've seen are volunteers and the students who come through our program. You know, we get a certain response from people, and I think it's in their desire and their longing for this service that the Vatican II Council did talk about. You know, they talked about the missionary church, and the missionary church cannot just be a church that, you know, only, you know, feeds people in soup lines, because as important as that is, like, it's necessity. It's why we're able to do what we're able to do. But people, you know, that's not, they realize there was something missing. They realize that personal connection was missing. And that's the biggest thing that I've noticed with our program. You say, return to the roots. Well, you know, the roots are relational. The roots are true encounter, not just meeting needs of people, mm-hmm. but truly meeting, like, exterior needs, but meeting their interior needs, like their humanity, looking them in the eye, in the face, you know. To give you a concrete example, we've had many groups who come in and have done service work through, you know, like serving in, you know, soup kitchens or things like that, or like doing sock drives. And then coming to Christ in the City, when you're able to look the person in the face who you did the sock drive for and shake their hand and then hear about their story, mm-hmm. I mean, that is the missionary church we're called to, especially by Vatican II. Just getting to the roots of the church and, you know, what we see in our program. And I think all three of us can say it's why we're, you know, so in love with the program, is because it truly allows us to live this encounter that Christ has asked us to do. And we see our volunteers live this, and then it's not limited to the homeless. Then you see our volunteers and our students who come through here and our missionaries in this lifelong mission. You see them encountering their fellow college students, their families, their friends, the lost among them, even not in the externally poor.
That's extraordinary to hear you say that. Phil, tell me about being a formator. That you are, Phil Couture, you are a consecrated layman yourself, and the church, the Christ in the City movement program is part of a larger context of things. Could you tell me a little bit about that and about your role as a formator for the young missionaries?
Yeah, I can. What Jonathan Reyes intended when he founded Christ in the City was, again, for this to be fundamentally a formation program. In terms of service to the most needy, that could take any number of different expressions. And if Christ in the City were to expand to different places, right, I mean, here in Denver we're serving the chronically homeless, but maybe in another place it would be to the elderly or to poor neighborhoods or any number of different things. But what Jonathan Reyes really wanted was a formation program where missionaries can find what they need to be able to be apostles and to transform the culture, to transform the world. So one idea that he had, if he wanted this to work, at least according to his vision, and Jonathan Reyes has founded innumerable projects and invited different communities into these projects, but for this one he had in mind, as he tells us, that the Soto Elysium take up the formation. The Soto Elysium being what I am. I'm a member of the Soto Elysium. I'm a consecrated layman, as he said. And the Marian Community of Reconciliation, the Fraternos, as we call them for short, who are basically the feminine version of them. So in terms of my experience being a formator, it's amazing. You get a front row seat into the action of the Holy Spirit. You see the missionaries being transformed in their community life and on the streets. And this transformation is projected onto the streets. They take Christ with them onto the streets.
And that's what you would, that's what you're trying to, I mean, when you're helping to form missionaries, the idea is to form them such that they are people who are carrying Christ where they go.
Absolutely. Something we emphasize all the time is that it's not enough to act like Christ. Mm. It's not enough to imitate his words, to imitate his actions. You have to become Christ. You have to become conformed to him. You have to put on Christ. So when you go out into the streets, there may be times where you are talking with somebody and maybe you never mention the name Jesus. Maybe you never mention Christ. Maybe there are times where you should mention his name. But honestly, a lot of the homeless that we encounter, they're so jaded from street preachers or people who come up and say, you need Jesus in your life, and they just feel abandoned. They feel abandoned by God, and they feel like these people are just saying, yeah, get Jesus and your life will get better. The truth is that we at Christ in the City believe, like along with these other people, that that Christ is the answer to their lives in every way. But the way of having that announced to them, the encounter they need to have with him, is fundamentally through his love and not just through words. And so when the missionary goes out and they are Christ, when they have received the Eucharist and been transformed by it, when they've been encountering him in their community life and so on and so forth, it doesn't matter whether they say the name Jesus or not, because they are being Christ to them. So conformation to him, becoming Christ himself, is essential for our mission.
And McKenna, for you, has that formation, well, what has that formation that Phil was talking about, forming to be Christ for others, which is radical, really. That's a radical call. What has that practically meant in your life, McKenna?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that, because when I came to Christ in the city, like I said, I had this big desire to serve the poor. And I had these great ideals of, you know, this is going to be me giving a year of my life, or 2 years as it turned out. But in the process, it was actually me that needed Christ in the city, and I was the one who received rather than the one who gave, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
I think Pope Francis said, let yourself be evangelized by the poor. And I really feel like they're the ones who minister to me, if that makes sense. Like, my friends on the street are the ones who care about my life and who ask me how I'm doing and who take a genuine interest in my life. And they're the ones who've changed me. And so I think formation, in that sense, has really formed me to be someone that, able to respond to their needs, but to receive love from them as well. And it's not really, I mean, we have certain moments of formation in our house. We have men's and women's small groups on Thursday nights. We usually have kind of a formation talk once during the week. We have our community prayer life. But formation is kind of a 24-hour thing. It happens in the littlest moments of correcting another member of the community or being corrected yourself, or reaching out and spending time with someone when you feel like you don't have the time. Formation has just kind of been a constant process.
Well, you mentioned the house, and I'll ask you about your situation in a second, Blake. But McKenna, while we're talking, what is your living situation like?
Yeah, we actually just moved into an old school, and there are 20 missionaries, 20 of us, who live together. Share rooms, 4 or 5 girls per room. I think the guys, I don't know about the guys, but we have kind of common spaces and then a men's and a women's wing and a chapel in our house, which is kind of the best blessing to have the Blessed Sacrament present. And then we eat all of our meals in community together, so we'll have different missionaries cook different days of the week for all of us.
So have you figured out who are the bad cooks? Like, it's going to be Blake tonight or something like that?
Yeah, usually some of the guys. No,
and Blake, tell me, what's your living situation like?
I am in the same house as McKenna. We have a total separate men's and women's wing.
within our school, or the school we live in. And I share a room right now with four other guys. And, yeah, same community life, same schedule and everything.
Okay, so now, and who else is there with you? Like, Phil, as a formator, are you there, or do you come by, or how does that work?
I frequently am here. I'm usually here throughout the day, and sometimes I even stay later into the evening. But I have my own community that I live with. We actually live at a parish in the Denver area, and I spend much of my day here and then go back, and I receive my own community life. I receive my own nourishment in that context. What we do in order to like have a full team who is attentive to the missionaries is we have some people who do live in house, so kind of like house dads and house moms. And they're attentive to the missionaries on a more, like throughout the evening should something come up. They're available at night if there's some emergency that was unforeseen or anything like that. But mm-hmm. we try and staff Christ in the City so that there's somebody who can be attentive to them at all moments of the day.
And Blake and McKenna, living in that situation, we hear so much about young people today being plugged in all the time or connected to their phones or screens of some kind. Is it different there, or do you have like these smartphones and all that, or how are you living as far as the connected life goes?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's the same as, you know, we all have our laptops, all have our computers and phones and Wi-Fi, but I think the real answer to that is living like McKenna mentioned, you know, like being a missionary is 24/7, like being present to our homeless friends when we're with them is our job when we're with them. And something we emphasize a lot is being present where you are. So no matter if you are at our house, maybe hanging out in the lounge, and there's a bunch of missionaries there, you know, the temptation is to get on your phone or your laptop, but truly realizing like we must be present with those around us. You know, there's a time and a place for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Hang out, check your, you know, social media and stuff like that. But, you know, really this call to be a missionary is like, you know, it just doesn't make sense to live the life on the streets with our homeless friends and be present to them and then come back to our community. And then, you know, be plugged in and unplugged from the community.
I see.
But it is crazy because, you know, that is where we learn to be present with our homeless friends actually is through our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say absolutely everything we do on street ministry stems from the formation of the community life and the prayer life, and the intellectual life, because you truly can't give what you don't have. And, you know, it's so, I think all the missionaries would agree. It's really easy to love the homeless, even in the difficulty of it. But, you know, boy, can it be hard to love those you live with. But if you can love those you live with, like, you know, loving the homeless comes that much easier.
And how about for you, McKenna?
Yeah, I think one thing that's been really helpful at Christ in the City is that we do still live in the world in some sense, right? Like we have cell phones, we have kind of the normal thing. And so it's a good time to form myself and to form our community to use the tools that the world gives us, but to not be of the world. And I think it'd be easier this year, you know, if no one had a cell phone, it'd be easier to plug into community. But it wouldn't really train us on after Christ in the City, how we live.
Right. Right. Indeed. Well, I have to say, and I hope this is not an awkward question, but as a parent, this will come up. It seems to me that young men and women living such intense community, so close to one another, that this, that there would romances would flower. So how do you handle that?
I think, I guess any of us could give our perspective. I guess I could start with the formator perspective. I know for us, we have seen that having, again, as you said, community life, that where a house is shared between the two genders, it's something that can present many benefits, and it could also present certain risks.
Yeah.
Among the benefits, I think what's clear and what we've enjoyed so much of Christ in the City is the complementarity playing out where the formation is all the more balanced because of it, where actually because of it, men learn to be men and women learn to be women. And they come to find their roles both in the community and on the streets and in very powerful ways. Something I often say is that the women tend to round out the rough edges of the guys, you know, not this like brutish approach or just like, you know, this idea of manliness in a certain way, but rather they call men to a higher standard. And that the men, especially on the streets, you see this in a very powerful way. The men always go with the women. There's never a team that goes onto the streets without at least one guy. Offer protection, stability, and a certain, let's say, sobriety to the tone of the conversation. Because sometimes you have people on the streets who can get the wrong idea when they're talking to a girl. When they're so used to not having any connection. And if you have just a girl come up, the guy could get the wrong idea. So there, I think we see the complementarity play out in the way God intended in a really amazing way. And as you said, there are certain risks, and these are things that we address very early on in the formation process. Within the first couple of weeks, we talk about what does authentic community life look like, and what does it mean that we're sharing this house together? How should this play out, and like what does it mean to live out purity and complementarity in this context? And I can say, at least from my point of view, I've been amazed by the maturity of the missionaries that come, that we accept into the program, and their willingness to live out the mission and place that at the forefront and to seek healthy relationships within this context. Obviously, we try and balance it out with certain restrictions. There's certain places in the house where the guys can't go, and there's certain places in the house where the girls can't go. And they respect these very diligently. We have different nights of the week where just the guys get together and just the girls get together, and different protocols for handling, for maintaining this healthy boundary. But as a formator, I could say like what I've seen in general has been very positive experiences of, I think what God wanted and where you see the human person being made man and woman and them offering this complementarity.
Blake or McKenna, any comment from either of you, or you want to just pass that one by?
No,
yeah.
it's one of those things that, you know, while you're here, a lot of people are like, oh, like, you guys don't struggle with those rules or anything, like the restrictions for the men and women. And, you know, it's we don't only just struggle with it. It's like the missionaries 100% back the, you know, the guidelines we have in place. And you may say like, oh, is it out of fear? Is it out of like, you know, maybe like not wanting to get in trouble? But in reality, like what you realize here is like the guidelines allow you to truly flourish as a community, like Phil was mentioning, and see this complementarity of men and women. And not only that, it's like when you have been given something like homeless ministry as, you know, the care of them, and you see the fruit coming from this, and then you see the fruit of like, just having your men's community to lean on, and for the women, just having the women's community to lean on. You know, it's one house and we're one community, but just, you know, the respect for, like, you know, the men getting together on our men's nights and the women getting together on the women's nights. Like, the community that's built from that and comes forth from it, it's, like, so amazing. We see the fruits so clearly and evidently. That's something, I mean, you wouldn't even think of disrespecting or even like, you know, pushing the lines, because we do see the fruits of that.
McKenna?
Yeah, I'd also like to add, kind of like Phil was talking about the complementarity, I think sometimes people, yeah, are a little surprised. Wow, all of these missionaries live together in one house, and almost a little scandalized. But I think it's a beautiful witness to the world, and it's been a beautiful witness to me of men and women living genuine friendship, which I've never experienced before. In my experience, it's either been, you know, romantic friendship, like, I don't know, unhealthy communities, mm-hmm. or it's been kind of unhealthy separation, like, oh, we're going to keep the men and women far from each other because mm-hmm. that's just easier. And it's beautiful, Christ in the City, that we can live together. And I never had brothers, and so I've had, you know, good brothers for the first time in my life here and really benefited from their friendship. So,
Well, as long as we're talking about uncomfortable things, how about money? What about how does that work? Is there a stipend, or do you, you know, maybe a person gets out of college and they have, you know, student loans to pay? Any of you can answer this, but how is that addressed in the community?
Yeah, the missionaries are.
Oh, you got to go for it, Blake.
Okay. The missionaries actually fundraise a little salary, and the salary pretty much just covers, I shouldn't say salary, we fundraise to live in community for a year and really able to give our lives. And for like the loans, we've had a lot of missionaries come in with loans. I'd say the majority of them, honestly, and just deferring those loans a couple of years while you're doing mission work is the best option for them. But we have to fundraise several thousand dollars, and it just goes to, you know, supporting our lifestyle. And by that, I mean, we live very simply here. We live off of food donation. We have a local food truck that brings us expired and, you know, old food from grocery stores that they can no longer sell. And it, you know, is a substantial portion of food each week that really allows us to have a minuscule food budget. And just, you know, sharing a room with four other guys right now. Just really, we work to cut costs in any way we can.
Okay. Phil, maybe anything else on, like, does the program have to do its own fundraising? How does that work?
Yeah, the program in a variety of ways seeks for the fundraising. Missionaries pay about a third of what it costs to have them here. And we try and be resourceful in whatever ways we can to invite other people to participate in our mission, and especially financially. So with that two-thirds that's left over, we have different events where we invite people to understand our mission and to support us financially. And as Blake said, there's a number of different environments that, ways where donors are invited to participate, ways to help with food, help with things we need for the house, to help with any new development in the program. So for us, it's something that could be intimidating, honestly, especially for missionaries as they begin to fundraise and ask this question of, will you support me in this? But it's, what we encourage them to understand is that you're giving people the opportunity to participate in the mission the way that they can. Not everybody can be a missionary. I firmly believe that everybody needs to have a friend on the streets, a friend among the homeless. But that's not to say that everybody can be available, the missionary can. But they can support the missionary. They can support the missionary so that they can live out this life of formation and community and of being conformed to Christ, and so that they can be available to the homeless in a way that most people can't.
And okay, so now say someone's listening, a young person's listening, and they think, maybe this is for me. What would you, and any of you can address this again, what would you suggest as next steps for that person?
So, one thing, you can definitely check out our website. We have great links there to videos. We've had some people put together some amazing videos that really give a better insight into our life, into our ministry, what we do. That can be found at www.christinthecity.co. And there you'll find a ton of resources like that. And even if you want to contact us, we love visitors. We love having people come and live our mission with us. It truly is part of our biggest mission, is bringing in these mission trips, bringing in these guests who come and serve on the streets with us. And all that information can be found on our website.
And is this something you all would like to see grow to other cities? No?
I think everyone's waiting to make the first move.
I thought you were like, no way. We don't want
to. No way. Yeah. No, as I said before, I really believe that that the world can benefit from an approach of knowing, loving, and serving the poor. I recently gave a talk at a parish, and I explained if everybody has some friend among the homeless, that means that the world, nobody will feel alone, and that is the biggest poverty that people experience on the streets. It's I oftentimes ask people, just imagine that you end up on the streets like that. That sounds like a superficial idea or just a change in circumstances, but in reality, if any of us were to end up on the streets, we would have any number of people that we could call, family members, friends, college roommates, buddies, coworkers. There's a whole network of people we have in our lives that can help us get out of this hard time and at least not spend it on the streets. At least, and yeah, we could have a space to get a, to get moving. But imagine getting up, falling onto the streets. Imagine not having anybody that you can make that call to. Nobody who can support you. That's that is an experience of isolation, of loneliness, that only gets compounded as they spend more time on the streets and as people refuse to look at them as they have to suffer and struggle to survive. So what is the biggest poverty? I really side with Mother Teresa. I believe it is loneliness. And it's something that the missionaries encounter every day. So what's the cure? It's not just money. It's not just food. Especially in Denver, we have all sorts of resources for people who do want to get off the streets. The biggest poverty is isolation. It's being alone. So if everybody in the U.S. were to find a friend, someone to encounter as a friend, that changes it a lot. But how do they do it? How are they going to find those resources? How are they going to understand like what it means to be a friend to somebody who's ended up in these circumstances? I really think that Christ in the City can offer that. And I think it's something that can be expanded to just about any city, especially the biggest cities.
Mm-hmm.
And we can offer this approach of love and encounter so that, so like the first Christian communities, like what we were talking about before, where they lived out this experience of unity, of evangelization, and there was no one in need among them. And I think that's a powerful sign that any Christian community can offer.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, you mentioned Mother Teresa, and I'm going to ask all of you, and I think I'll start with McKenna on this. Who are your models? Like when you like is Mother Teresa or, you know, another saint, or who do you look for as a model for the kind of life that you're trying to live? McKenna, do you mind if I start with you?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa and John Paul II are actually our official patron saints. And so they kind of guide and inspire us in the way that we live our life together and the way that we live on the street and encounter the poor. And so we invoke them daily and their intercession to help us with our ministry. And I think they kind of chose us in a sense too. We didn't really choose them, but they had their eye out and really took us under their wing to help at the beginning of Christ in the City.
Blake?
Yeah, I mean, that's funny. McKenna mentions that they chose us because I was fundraising this last summer, and I had someone, you know, with St. Teresa's canonization this last fall. Someone's like, wow, it is so clear that, you know, Mother Teresa chose, like, to start a program like Christ in the City through young people like you to combat this loneliness Phil's mentioning. And I couldn't agree more with what McKenna says. It's, you look at what we do, you look at the life of John Paul II and Mother Teresa, and both of them just combated loneliness. They truly encountered the human person, and that's something that, you know, there's no amount of books, there's no amount of, you know, biographies we can read on them to truly grasp what they did. But, you know, through them, through Christ's example, that's truly, you know, who we look to, those who have done it and have done well.
How about you, Phil?
I don't mean to be redundant, but those two are very powerful examples for me as well, especially John Paul II. I went to World Youth Day and was very touched by the encounter I had with him. But another person who really exemplifies for me what it means to be an apostle, what it means to be on mission, and that I look to often, is actually Our Lady of Guadalupe. She is a person, she is Mary in this expression of herself. She took on a culture. She took on a way of seeing reality. She took on even like a pagan way of seeing reality, and she transformed it. She directed all of it, all these things that seemed so far from God, directly to her son in this miraculous image that she presented. And what we often find on the streets is that people are in this different world. They have this different way of seeing things, and sometimes coming in a different way of life and a different vision. It's like, how can it be? Like, you know, how do we take this and how do we redeem it? How do we bring this person to Christ? And some people can be really disheartened by that. Some people can think it's just not possible. But I look at Our Lady of Guadalupe and the effect that she had for a whole nation, a whole peoples. And it just inspires me to remember, yes, we can do this. Like any person's reality can be redeemed. It can be transformed. And we need to learn to take on that expression, not in terms of falling into any sinfulness or anything that is against the gospel, on the contrary, but rather taking everything that is good, everything that can be reconciled, and bringing that to Christ.
And now, Blake and McKenna, when does your current year of missionary service end, and then what comes next for each of you?
Yeah, we finished up our year officially in the middle of July. And then after that, there's not really currently a third year possibility for Christ in the City. So we'll kind of, head out to the real world. I hope to actually do some writing. I studied journalism in college and would like to continue to transform the culture through writing and through print journalism. So.
And you, Blake?
Love to sit here and tell you I have as much planned as McKenna, but no, the year's just ending in July for me as well, and just still surveying the potential future options. But it's amazing how equipped Christ in the City has prepared us for that next step. No matter what it is, I think it's truly a peaceful step for me, at least, just realizing the human formation I've received here as well. Is knowing, it's going to be okay. And it's one of those deals where it's like the call to be a lifelong missionary. I think if you were to ask us all, I think that's the next step for sure.
Well, that we'll let that be the last word then. Thank you all so much. McKenna Clausen and Blake Brouillette, both missionaries, and Phil Couture, a formator. Thank you all for joining us today on Catholic Answers Focus.
Real pleasure. Thank you.
And God bless you in your ongoing efforts there. Thank you to the listener for joining us today on Catholic Answers Focus. We're so happy to have you with us. We'll be back with you again next week.